Hi, everybody. Today's guest is Mickey Mod. He is an adult performer, he's a director, and he's also a fellow dad. What's up, man?
Thank you.
You know, I come here for you, but I stay for the production value.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Live studio audience on podcasts, not something that you see.
No. I save the special stuff for the special guests. So, sir, how's things? How you been? It's AVN week. You exhausted?
Yeah, it's AVN week. I am definitely, Vegas has left me very, very dry, very dehydrated, and I'm working so hard to combat that, but it's...
There's not enough lotion or humidifiers in Vegas for people. If you're not living out here, you're just like, fuck, I hate this place so much. It took us almost a year before our skin finally was like, fine, we'll give in. We'll work with you now.
Yeah, it's... I don't know how people live here. This is why people are not supposed to live in the desert.
I know.
Yeah.
And it's also colder here now. This is something people forget, too. They're like, oh, Vegas is so fucking hot. It's the desert. It's extreme. So it gets just as fuck. It gets crazy cold in the winter like it gets crazy hot in the summertime.
Yeah. There's, like, nothing to keep the heat, and there's nothing to keep the shade. It's, yeah, it's fucked up all year round.
And God forbid you go walking out anywhere that looks, because I found this out the hard way. I went walking around. It was like, oh, this is so nice. And it looks soft from the road, which it's not, because anytime it looks soft, it's not. Everything out here is sharp. And I fucked around one of the first times I went out and saw this fuzzy looking little thing. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? And I kicked it. No, it was full of fucking, it was a fucking cactus. And they weren't soft. They were fucking very rigid. And the edge of my shoe, there's these little spikes sticking out, and they had went through the leather in the shoe, through the sock, and into my fucking toe.
Oh, shit.
And I pulled a few of them out, and then had to, because of the rest of them, because I kicked the shit out of it, I'd take my shoe off and pull these fucking needles that had run down the length of my toe. I learned my lesson. I don't kick shit in the desert anymore.
I think that's a really good lesson for people who need to learn that lesson. So if you're at home and you're like, I need to kick the shit out of desert plant, learn from JP.
Learn from me. Don't do it. All right, so Mr. Sir, you've been on the floor a lot. You've been kind of just roaming around. You've been, because you guys had the suite, so you're kind of upstairs meeting and doing shit too, right?
Yeah, so this is the first year that we've had the model appreciation suite, which I think is a really good use of our time here,
right?
I feel AVN, you know, in the past is, you know, I think things are kind of changing as the industry as a whole, and I think people are kind of, like, recognizing us more. I mean, we have, like, almost 20 nominations this time around, a lot for Derelict, so thank you. Yes, get those buttons. The value out of that mixer.
Or hold on, I got a plug, too. There, Derelict. Okay. That was really loud, though, sorry.
So it's crisp, you know? It's very good for crisp. The morning.
And that's the thing, because I think Derelict on its own has... six or seven, I think so.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, I think best BDSM feature, there is, like, a best action thriller.
Oh, no, we're not with the Derelict. Didn't we moved up? I've been talking about this on the podcast. First, I've always, I say always, the last movie I made was best BDSM, and we got it. Mm-hmm. And this year I was like, we're gonna go into best BDSM, we're gonna own that motherfucker, and we're gonna take this thing home. And they were like, this is better than, so we're gonna put it up here. So they didn't, we've got the two SOS series that are best BDSM.
Oh, that's right. That's right, yeah.
Derelict is best action thriller.
Yes.
So I was like, oh, shit. I still, looking at the people that are in there with it, I think that I think we still have a chance.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I think the level of visibility, like, this year is, like, just dramatically increased.
Right.
And... you know, I think we've always been a real strong, like, player in this industry. I think we kind of stand, you know, a little bit alone, just not just in content, but just, you know, geographically being in San Francisco so long. And Right. Now, you know, so much of the brand was tied to, like, the Armory, that when we moved out of the Armory, people were like, are you guys still, I heard you, oh, Kink was great when you guys were, like, making content. I'm like, no, bitch, we still make content.
We're still there. We just sold the fucking castle.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, that's one of my... you know, in this new role as creative director, like, that is kind of one of my, like, one of my personal missions is to kind of, you know, bring back that strong brand identity that's, right, like, not tied to, like, the Armory as an identity.
Which I think is good. So, yeah, that's good. You just segued right into that for me, so I didn't have to get to it.
Oh, yeah.
So, Let's talk about your history at King.
Yeah.
Can we do that?
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah.
So you tell me, because I know where I met you, but where how did Mickey Mod get started and at kink.com?
Yeah, it's funny because Mickey Mod was almost entirely created by like Kink in a sense. Like,
okay.
So when kind of looking to get into the industry in the Bay Area at that time, so this is like 12 years ago, 2008. Yeah. Oh man.
Fuck.
Yeah. You know, Craigslist had this section called, I think it was like a adult gigs or adult services section, which was just kind of combination of like at that time, like escort ads and like webcam stuff. And like before webcam was as big as it is now. And like just people trying to like make their own kind of amateur porn stuff. And Kink would often post for, you know, talent recruitment, and they were starting a new site, which became Public Disgrace.
Okay.
And they were looking for like gangbang extras. And at the time I was like out of a relationship that wasn't like, I think there was just kind of a lot of incompatibilities, and leaving that relationship was like, all right, I have these like, you know, sexual fantasies and experiences that I want to have. And I'm not, I'm getting into these relationships where like, that doesn't feel like safe, or that doesn't feel right in the context of like how the other person wants to have a relationship. So like not really knowing that there's many different ways that you can have a relationship, and a lot of different, you know, it can look a lot of different ways, and you can have a lot of elements. You can be monogamous, non-monogamous, open, poly, you know, and at that time I like started to kind of get an interest in like, all right, well, I have these fantasies. I'm looking for like different types of relationships. I'm like reading a lot, and, you know, being kind of like the Bay Area weirdo that I am, had a lot of goth friends. And so, you know, started kind of like hanging out with people who were kind of, you know, really invested in the BDSM scene of San Francisco. And so I was aware of kink.com.
Right.
Just being in the Bay Area. And they had posted an ad. I went in. I met the talent recruiter at the time, which is kind of funny because I later, you know, spent a great deal of my time working in talent at Kink, then doing the interviews. And yeah, I took some nude photos, and they're like, okay, we'll give you a call. Like a few weeks later, they gave me a call, like set up the testing, and I was on set for one of the test shoots that became Public Disgrace.
Oh, shit.
And it was with Lorelei, who, funny enough, we had actually hung out prior to both of us getting in the adult industry, because we went to the same school together.
You and Lorelei.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So we like knew each other and hadn't seen each other for a while. And that was the next time we saw each other, was on set for
a porn.
Yeah.
So you guys went to school together. Because what kind of school was it? Was it a film school, art school?
No, just regular, just university.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you guys knew each other at college, and then... And you were friends, so you knew each other.
Yeah.
Not like, oh, there's a hot girl or there's a hot guy. Like, you guys just...
Well, we actually like went out on like a really, really bad date.
So there was...
I mean, it was a nice date. It just was like, you know, nothing came out of that.
Right.
Yeah. So it was just kind of like, oh, yeah, I went on that like really awkward date with that person.
There they are, naked.
And here we are on the gangbang set. Okay. Actually, also, Wolf Hudson was also on that shoot as well. He was one of the more like experienced male talent on that shoot. And then, you know, things kind of came, you know, shoot after shoot from that. And, you know, kind of Public Disgrace was definitely kind of like a regular, you know, position for me. And working with like Princess Donna and all the other, you know, guest doms and performers that came through that site, you know, just like a lot of industries, like once you kind of get started and then your reputation kind of like builds, which is, it's easy in adult industry to build a good reputation if you have any prior work experience of showing up on time or communicating clearly what your like needs and expectations are, and, you know, responding to emails,
listening, your job,
putting some things on a calendar,
right?
You know, things that are, you know, still a challenge for some people.
More than
know.
It should be.
Yeah. Yeah. Way more than it should be, way too often.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and so things just kind of like progressed like more and more, and as I spent more time in the armory and getting to know people, like, yeah, my career kind of grew, and then I also started working there full time in the talent department and as a booker, and then doing like flight arrangements and testing arrangements, and then like booking talent and working with directors to kind of like figure out like what their talent was going to be for their shoots,
right?
And then working. Doing the behind the scenes blog for Behind Kink,
because you ran that. How long was that? A year or two?
I think I did 2 years for Behind Kink, and okay. then I got taken over by one of our other coworkers for a while, and then they kind of like shelved it because it's kind of a,
when you were finished with it, they kind of were like, all right, well, yeah, we're done.
Yeah,
it didn't take them long. I didn't think it seemed like it took much after that.
Well, you know, it's a really kind of, I think that was kind of like a. Very unique position. I don't know a whole lot of other companies that have like kind of a full-time person to do behind the scenes and like social media stuff. And
yeah,
it was fun. Then I went away for a little bit, went to Austin, went back to school for software engineering, came back, worked as an engineer for Kink for a couple of years. And now just recently, I guess it's been since the beginning of December, I am now the creative director over at kink.com.
Fuck yeah, you are.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man. I didn't know how long you had been in the industry because when you said that, I was like, holy shit, so you were 2 years deep by the time I got there.
Yeah. Yeah, because you got there in, what, 2010?
2010, yeah. Which is crazy to me because I was just thinking about that. I was talking to the wife, and I was like, fuck, 2020? And I started thinking about it. I was like, fuck, I'm almost a decade deep just at kink.com.
Yeah.
And I'm, November of this year will be the 10 year anniversary at Kink. So that's going to be into my 16th year of being in porn. Fucking ridiculous. I had Derek Pierce on recently, and I was telling him, I was like, I'm just going to call ABN and be like, look, you don't have to keep giving me all this other shit. Or even, I mean, it's cool that I'm getting nominated for it. Just put me in the Hall of Fame. Give me that. I mean, because I've been doing it long enough. I don't need the other recognition. The awards and all the other shit is cool, and I appreciate it, but just put me in the Hall of Fame. Just give me that acknowledgement that I've been doing it that fucking long.
Yeah, yeah. Because the Hall of Fame is, like, that's the forever one. Like, no one's like, who won best, like, boy-girl scene 6 years ago?
Yeah, they're like, oh, who's best BDSM? What year did he do that?
Yeah.
Hall of Fame, they can be like, oh, they don't, and they probably still won't know me. Like, I was teasing with Disco. This is a funny noise. So, because, you know, Disco is his name. I have a new little thing, so every time I say disco, we go. Disco.
Man, you have too much fun with this thing.
I do. I have way too much fun.
I mean, having the same mixer, I'm now inspired to,
go get noises.
Go get some noises.
I've got some fun stuff on here. I got silly shit, and I've got some fun, depending on the mood of everybody. But so anyway, him and I are going to go do the red carpet today.
Nice.
And we've already been joking, and I've been telling him, like, I've been trying to get him to come on the podcast, and he's like, dude, it's going to flop because I'm nobody. Nobody knows who I am. And I was like, dude, more people know about you than probably most of the people because I talk about him on almost every episode because we've been working together.
Yeah.
7 years, half of our career, we've been working together at this point, over half.
Yeah.
And I told him, I was like, just be prepared because the way it's going to work is we're going to walk down. There's going to be the fans and we have options. If anybody calls us, we can go say hi if we want, or we can just ignore them and keep moving. Excuse me. And then we get to a point where, and this was just explained to me by Casey Calvert, that there's X's, and you stop on this X, people take pictures, they call your name. And he was like, what if they don't call our name? I was like, then we'll smile and walk away.
Yeah. I was telling the story the other day about the first time I walked the red carpet at AVN, and I was like a part of a big feature, and everybody, like, we did this, like, group photo at the beginning, and then everybody kind of, like, paired off.
Right.
And then I was kind of the odd man out because the other person who was left was like, it's my first time here. My boyfriend's already mad at me, so I'm just going to walk alone if that's okay. And I'm like, yeah, sure. I didn't know. So I was, you know, just a single dude in between, this row of like really hot women, and the photographers do not care about taking photos of dudes at any porn event.
Unless you are like Manuel or yeah. Derek in his $5,000 suit that he wears or whatever. And I just think they still are like, okay, that's great. Now will you get the fuck out of the way so we can get the girls?
Yeah. Yeah. They want way so many more poses. So like people literally were like, okay, move on. Keep going, dude. Keep going. And I'm like, but I can't go because the, you know, the woman in front of me, I think it was Bailey J, was like taking photos. And then, it was Seda. Yeah. Seda was like taking photos behind me. And I'm like, everybody's telling me to move on, but I can't move on because the person is in front of me.
Are you telling me that I have to just skip? I have to be the guy that's in the video? Because you see it anytime. At some point, one of the girls, one of the female models, is going to post a video of her having everyone call her name and the snapping going off. And there's always that guy that just walks through the background.
Yep.
That's going to be me.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the biggest pinstriped motherfucker that moves down the red carpet ever. This is going to be my first time. Out of all the AVN, even the one where we got best BDSM. No, fuck the red carpet. Because it's the line. There's like the Hard Rock. And anybody that's been to the Hard Rock in Vegas, well, if you haven't, tough shit, because they're going to close the doors like next week after the AVN. Mm. But, you know, it's all the way. The line goes out to, I don't know how far inside it is, but then it goes all the way out, all the way through where all the pickups are, where the big guitar and, you know, where they drop off. And it's just fucking 50, 60, 100 people deep.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It stays that way for hours. And I'm like, it's cold out here right
now. Yeah. You stand outside, cold. So many people are in, like, uncomfortable, like, footwear and, like, you know, we're not a patient bunch. Mm-mm. Not at all. And we're all trying to, like, you know, like, make our name, you know, in this, like, the night that we have and get on that carpet and, like, take those photos and, like, you know, try to look hot for everything. And it's also, just people have been in Vegas for like way too many days at that point.
Most of them are sick. They don't feel well. They've lost their voices. And the ones that actually do feel good are probably fall down drunk at that point.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're no fun to be around either.
Yeah, absolutely.
You walk in with anybody? Are you
selling? I'm walking with Ashley Lane because we're in a scene for a different company that was nominated for Best Boy Girl Scene.
Oh.
Yeah, which is really weird. It's I don't perform that much.
Right.
And so to have this kind of like high level, I mean, I've gotten other nominations. I've gotten Best Supporting Actor a few times for some of the feature stuff that I've been in. But I always feel like that's kind of a weird, I don't really know what that's based on. I'm like, is that actually based on my acting? Is that based on like the sex performance?
Is it because I look weird with combination? My pants off?
Yeah. And so this is the kind of like highest like profile nomination.
Who's it for?
It's for Deeper.
Okay.
I've worked for them a number of times.
They got a lot of eyes on them right now because they are kind of newer to the game and they've got a super high production value. I personally never watched. I've seen previews of it because like you and other people, I know several people that have been in their stuff, and I'm like, fuck, this is the same. It's the same level as like Adult Time with the stuff where emails will do it. And I feel like that's where a lot of people are like, oh, let's do this thing, but let's shoot it on the red. Let's get the most expensive high end cameras so this shit looks so good. And as long as people are taking their time and giving it this over the top cinematic look, but this is where we're headed. I think that's the thing. So,
yeah, anyway. I mean, I think the technology has kind of like got up to where, you know, we can kind of deliver that like higher end quality, you know, and I'm excited that it's getting there and like things are more accessible for people to make things that look great. You know,
they're up in the ante and I think they're doing the same thing with, I mean, I've talked to Disco about it. Like, this is something we got to do. Like I think I was telling you yesterday when we had a meeting and talking about stuff that he's getting ready to upgrade and our shit's about to, everything's about to change. Like, it's not a red, but it might as well. He might as well get a fucking red.
Yeah.
The money he's about to spend just on the fucking body of a new camera.
Well, yeah, I think that's the great thing is that like now you don't, it's like even better than it was like 5 or 10 years ago where like, you know, when the red came out, you're like, oh my God, this is incredible. When we're like, well, it's $70,000.
Just for the brain.
Yeah. And then you got to add like another $50,000 to make that shit work.
Right.
And people are like, well, fuck you. And now,
I'll go with the Sony A7S2.
Yeah.
Because it's 4K.
Yeah. And you can get like great footage. You can deliver things in like 4K. And it's a really great time. And I think especially for us, which is an industry that is not always known for high production value.
No.
We can have that little like step up and come up a little bit.
I think the industry's gotten to a point with the movies that we're doing. You're either making amateur stuff, which is killing it right now. And by amateur, I mean anything that people are doing on their phones.
Yeah.
That it doesn't have, and people are killing, they want it. They're dying for it. They're like, I need, you know, Casey Covert's OnlyFans. I need Mickey Mod's OnlyFans. And you get the fan, and I don't know if you are taking that stuff.
But yeah, I just started. I just, like, made an OnlyFans.
If you stay on it, there's supposed to be fucking unlimited money. I hear about it, and I'm like, this sounds like what it was when I got in the industry, where you could almost throw a turd, figuratively, up against the wall, and people are like, fuck, here's millions of dollars, take it. And people were there, you could just do anything, and it didn't have to be the top of the pile kind of shit. It could be very subpar, and people like, fuck it, because it was all still new. No one had done this, and no one had done that. And it's gotten to where you're either doing the amateur, which is, you know, the OnlyFans and the Fan Centro. You're doing the donuts, which is a lot of what Kink does. Our donuts look a lot better than most, but it's still just doing the donuts, the weekly, let's just feed the fucking machine. And then there's now the level of Derelict or the Deeper or the fucking Brie Mills stuff. They're like, you know, so I named a specific movie, a company, and then a director. But it was all, you know what I'm saying? It's like that's high-end cinematic value that people are like, that's what I want.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's interesting that there's like this, the two extremes of like people wanting the amateur content that feels like very intimate because it's this, you know, it's on your phone and it is coming from someone else's phone. So it's like, oh shit, Casey Calvert is sending me this hot video. You know, it feels more personal. It's right. Kind of, you know, capitalizes on that sort of like, I think that's why like webcam has come up, right? Because it's like, oh, this hot girl has invited you into their room.
Right.
You know, this hot person is like, oh yeah, just come to my house. That's what, you know, people who are like looking, they want that sort of intimacy, and it captures that.
That just gave me an idea. I'm going to build a set. You know what it's going to be? It's going to be an airplane bathroom.
Oh.
And just every time a girl comes here, you can use my set, go over there and do the nastiest thing you want to do in the airplane bathroom. Who's going to know the difference?
That's great.
Because that's the thing. It's like the sneaky squirrel. It's like, ooh, I'm going to the bathroom at the airport, or I'm sneaking to the bathroom at fucking Chili's, and I don't know that that's the thing, but going to different, I'm at Chili's, and I'm going to sneak in there and whack off. But it's like, like Danny Daniels, that's her thing, is going in public bathrooms and public places, public.
Yeah.
And like Cherie does the same shit where Cherie, you know, fucks the Uber driver and the stepson. And I mean, I love the idea. And she told me that she caught slack actually from performers. They're like, you know, you're giving us a bad name by just fucking all these random guys. And she was like, look at the dick. Look at all of the dick. Notice that it's all the same dick.
Yeah.
Most of it anyway.
Yeah.
And then the performers, like, you don't know, there's a couple, not to say that there's not, there are a couple who will go fuck anyone and don't care, which makes me nervous, but whatever, that's them.
That's, I think that's always going to be the case.
Yeah.
It's so interesting how, you know, I think this is always, and you and I have talked about this a lot, that there's a weird sort of the separation of disbelief or the, so you watch a Batman movie, right? You see Christian Bale playing the character of Batman.
Right.
You see Christian Bale not in the Batman suit in a different movie. You're not like, oh, that's Batman. Like, right. I need to like, but it doesn't work the same way for porn.
Right.
Because it's like, this is, you know, like your body and your image and your character persona. And I think because the sex is real, sometimes people have a hard time like separating that, like that fantasy from like the reality of that it's actually a production. And it's a very like, in this way, it's a very like, it's almost like sleight of hand in a way, right? Like we're going to get you like so horny that you're not like seeing all the strings that we're pulling and all of these sort of things that kind of, that we use to capital. Yeah. I actually wind up, like for my own trade content, I did a scene, with someone who was, they were going on like a European tour, and for some companies in Europe, I think because of some of the issues kind of with like not having standardized testing, they're like you need to be tested like in the US and like if, and then test when you get there. And if there's any sort of like discrepancy, like they'll, you know, for companies that are like paying for your flight, they're like, we're going to send you home because we can't put this expense out to like,
right.
You know, so, you know, people get a bit paranoid and we're like, okay, well, we were planning on doing this shoot, and they got the call to like do this like European trip. And she was like, oh, can we use like a condom? I just, you know, like we're all tested, but I still, you know, I'm not trying to like, you know, fuck up my European tour. I'm like,
right.
Yeah, sure. And that, like people found that extra hot because it was almost this level of like extra dirty because it was like, oh wait, you're using a condom. What's going on? Like people had all these questions about it. I'm like, you know, that's what you're supposed to do, right? Like when you just meet someone and you have sex with them. Yeah.
So we need to revisit like almost all of the gangster rap from the 90s. Because I love that genre, but it's like that was such a thing in the 90s. And you're younger than I am, but you're old enough to remember the 90s. And that was like the scare of AIDS and everybody. Yeah. I mean, the infamous fucking Ice Cube putting a sock on the pickle and, you know, double wrapping it. And obviously, people,
it was so ingrained in 90s hip hop culture. Like, everybody was, you know, like, you know, AIDS hitting like the black community and like people kind of responding in music and entertainment, like was, yeah, it's weird. You don't really hear that in like music. Like no one like,
I think because it's not as scary now, which it should be.
Yeah.
It should be. All of you motherfuckers should be scared of that shit.
Yeah.
Because even though there's all of this, the drugs that can control it and get the, you know, the counts down and the cells, whatever. And I don't know all the science behind it, but they can get you back to basically almost technically
undetectable,
but you're still infected. So and maybe it's because it's not as scary anymore and people are like, oh, don't worry about it. Because I remember, like, there was a couple times that I was buzzed, had enough of it, and I was like, I don't care, and went balls deep and instantly was like, hey, you know what, wait a minute, and got up and not, it was one of those too late moments where I went to the bathroom, washed, and was like, hey, you know what, just talk, because I had plunged and was like, God, this is stupid, this is dumb as shit, and this is, there's not a piece of ass on the planet that's worth getting that shit, getting anything over.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, I think a lot of, you know, a lot of things have changed on a societal level with, you know, also people kind of evolving out of homophobia a little bit. I mean,
right.
Like, everybody still has a long way to kind of go with that. But, you know, it used to be seen as, like, you know, AIDS is a gay disease that is, you know, this, you know, plaguing this community, and that's how people saw it, you know, that's how people saw it in
AIDS.
Yeah, and like there was no acknowledgement of it for like decades, you know, by the government, by the medical community as something, or actually any movement on things. And so as that has changed, you know, and like, you know, medicine has gotten better where people, you know, who, you know, get HIV and get AIDS can like live longer, healthier lives.
They can grow old and die, not from AIDS.
Yeah, so it wasn't this sort of like mystery, like death sentence thing where people were ignoring because everybody hated gay people.
Which it seemed more acceptable then. When I say more acceptable, I mean the people hating. Back in the 80s, it was still very much, the wife and I were having a conversation about this because there's a Dead Kennedy song, and I forget the name of it now, but one of the lines is something, something, we're going to see how the N-word goes or N-word lives or something like that. And it's a pretty popular song, and I wish I could remember the name of it now. And it just is, rolls right off of his tongue.
Yeah.
And they had, I think it was the drummer was a black man. And it was, and I was talking about, I was like, it's just weird to me that there's so many people that are instantly stuck in a corner because they've used that word because it's a hateful word.
Yeah.
But there was never, this is, and it's also coming from the same band who had Nazi punks fuck off.
Yeah.
But then you're throwing the N-word around, and it's weird how it was acceptable, more acceptable to be that kind of bag of shit, to throw the N-word around, throw the F-word around, like using, you know, whoever, oh, I don't get along with you because, you know, your skin color, nah, I'm going to say this word and you're not going to do anything. Or I don't get along with you because, you know, you homosexual, so I'm going to call you this word. And it's just weird that now people get slapped in the mouth a lot faster now than they did in the 80s. The 80s was just like, well, fuck, that sucks. I don't like that.
Yeah. I mean, we're growing up, you know, as human beings. I think with that, like, as you know, and this can definitely like kind of segue back into our industry, there's certain industries that kind of get a pass for like letting things slide that you wouldn't be able to get, you know, you wouldn't be able to like push through in other industries, you know.
Right.
Adult industry has always had a kind of weird and difficult and problematic like past when it comes to like race issues, gender issues, homophobia, you know, all of the isms like are just way more. Adult industry is kind of a caricature of the larger society, right?
Because we let a lot of shit slide.
Yeah.
A lot of shit.
Yeah. And it's weird because we get a lot of shit for that as if we are kind of like the, you know, like we're the like cooks and chemists of like, you know, hate and misogyny. When we're actually like the most kind of supply and demand, yep, like a direct industry, like we're directly responding to what people want. Like, yeah. As you know, you've been in this industry for, you know, over a decade and a half, that we kind of make the things that sell. And if people aren't buying it, we're going to try to make other stuff.
Yeah.
Like we're always trying to scramble and be very adaptive. And that's why things like the parody craze went on for so long. And then like MILF craze went on for so long. And now we're in the, you know, the faux incest stuff.
Yeah.
And because there's such a shame about sex in this country, there's not going to be any conversation about like, hey, America, it seems like you guys really, 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 really want to be fucking your step, like, brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
And which we all know we're saying stepbrothers and stepsisters because you need to feel like there's some sort of like legality loophole. Maybe we should kind of be having a national conversation about incest and like why that's so important for people to kind of seek out that sort of content. But you know, this is the sort of like catch 22 of being in this industry. It's like whenever you say like, and it, you also see this happening to athletes all the time. It's like you're like, hey, actually maybe we should kind of talk about this problem in our society, and they're like, shut up and stick to the fucking, you know,
right?
Just like when Colin Kaepernick was like, hey, I actually think that police brutality is a problem, and like I'm gonna use like my platform to protest. And they're like, "Shut up and get back to the football."
Yeah, do your fucking job or go away.
Yeah, and
it is. This is a direct correlation, and it's Derek, we had almost the exact same little part of this where he said the same thing you just said, that, you know, people like, I can't, but it's more of us being judged. Well, you guys in the porn industry, you're the ones that are pushing this rapey stuff and this fucking bondagey stuff and this incest. You're buying it.
Yeah.
You motherfuckers are buying it. So as long as you keep buying it, we're going to fucking make it. And it has, and it's nice that we have a job that we can do these things, but I mean, people, you don't get to shame us for doing something that you're jerking off to.
Yeah. That you're paying for.
Yeah. And that's the reason incest is still a thing. That's the reason fucking bondage is a thing. That's the reason all of these things. I mean, here's the thing. No one goes to De Niro and says, look, you are perpetuating Italian stereotypes and mob stereotypes. No one goes at him like that. Why? Because he's a fucking actor. He's doing a job. Same thing that we are. But because, like you said, people are like, oh, well, you're naked and your dick's out. So that's got to be real. It can't be. There's no way you're just faking that. That storyline, you know, like there's any advertisement marketing thing you can think of where there's, you know, the little clips playing on whatever site you go to. Do you really think that fucking Jordy has that many sisters he can sneak into the bathroom and stick his dick through the shower curtain and his sister's gonna be like, oh, or stepsister, and she's like, oh, look, there's my stepbrother's dick, let me put that in my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So stop bitching, people, just saying. Yeah. We're making it because you're fucking paying for it and you keep asking for it. I think by no means am I trying to inspire someone or tell anyone that, because we're not going to make shit that's illegal and motherfucking unconsensual. So don't even start that shit. But I was talking to him. I was like, you know, and I'll ask you the same thing. What do you think the next thing is? If you had to put speculate, what do you think the next craze is going to be? Because that's the thing. If we can figure that out, we got it made.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that would be something that I would be, if I could figure that out, I'm not sure I would share it. And,
fuck you guys.
But you could watch me make all that money. You
can watch me as I circle around AVN and land on top with my new personal helicopter.
Yeah. You know, I do think that there's some things that I do think that probably in the next, I think it's probably going to be this year or the next year that you're going to see just more, just sexual fluidity in content. You know, I think we've seen that just kind of like, you know, starting to change with like more cis and trans performers like working together for like bigger name studios, and like that's great. And I think that there's going to just be like just more of like, hey, this person who, you know, doesn't act with this, you know, part of the industry, like everybody just kind of like just being very fluid and people really kind of, I think kind of pushing that, which is, I think it's just very exciting. I think the industry has kind of had like a weird issue of like not kind of talking about like homophobia and biphobia and the transphobia that is still, it's still a problem and it's still gonna, you know, happen because people in this industry come from like all over the world and people have like very limited experience with like certain groups of people. And it's, right. You know, it's going to still be an issue because people are working in very vulnerable spaces with their body and, you know, have, you know, the set of comforts and boundaries that they need to have around that.
Right.
And sometimes those don't always like work well together. And sometimes people are like really have a really just ease of like saying really offensive shit around that.
I think it's out of fear. I think people say shit like that because it's fear.
Yeah.
I think I've always said this, excuse me, that I feel like most, and I can't say all because I'm not a doctor, but I feel like most homophobia stems from homosexual thoughts. And this is kind of a common thing.
Yeah.
And it's the self-hatred. Well, I was raised and, you know, my dad said that I'm not supposed to, that's, you know, that's a fag thing.
Mm-hmm.
And no kid of mine's going to be that guy. So I have these feelings, but I know I'm going to get fucking punched in the face, or figuratively, hopefully, or whatever the, you know, the repercussions is, because my dad's not going to have a homosexual son or daughter. And then they start going, well, I have to do everything I can to press this down and not be this person. And then it turns into an outward hate towards what they really are because they can't be them.
Yeah.
And I think that's the one thing, if anything, that we do in this industry is to break down that barrier to say it's okay. You're sitting around and there's several people fucking and you, hey, buddy, let me help you out with that. And we're doing it as an industry and as a community, sex workers, that it's okay to be that way. If you have an urge, it's okay. Urge that's healthy and consensual.
Does no harm. Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong as long as everyone's sitting there and it's like, hey, you know what, Mickey, I don't mind you stroking my dick or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing as like, I had Angela on and we talked about the story yesterday that, she released Angela Loves Women. I think it was number 5
mm-hmm.
and there was no publicity. There was no, hey, AVN, I need an article about this. There was nothing. And she just had all women. One of them happened to be a trans woman and she didn't feel the need to call attention to it. She didn't feel the need to make a big deal out of it because at the end of the day, when I asked her about it, I was like, why didn't you do all that? She's like, because she's a fucking woman, period.
Yeah.
There's a, why would I, did I make a big deal out of all the other women that I fucked that had vaginas? No. So why would I make anything about the woman that I fucked that happened to have a penis?
Yeah.
So fuck you motherfuckers. Cause that's, and I feel like her and, you know, there's plenty of big names out there. I think Chechik has done it now. Sheree DeVille has done it. Like, there's a lot of bigger names that are kind of looking at their agent going, no, you don't, I'm going to do this, whether you fucking like it or not. And wall after wall after wall is coming down.
Yeah. And I think a big part of it is all of the, you know, kind of like OnlyFans, mini vids, where like performers are actually able to take more of their, like, are able to take greater control of their revenue streams that are not tied to their agencies that, you know, maybe kind of passing on kind of archaic, shitty, like, beliefs about, like, what people are appropriate to work with.
Right.
I mean, we've seen that. We've seen that there is often a problem with not all agencies, but agencies wanting to kind of control the scope of work that a performer, or wanting to kind of stage how a performer's career, you know, goes out of their own interest of like, how can I make the most money off of this person in time and
not taint their relation or taint their yeah. Reputation by doing something that agent felt they shouldn't do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think people are way more understanding of the sort of the lifespan of a performer and how that has changed, where you're not going to have the sort of Jenna Jameson That's what I'm saying. Type of like porn star, Sasha Gray superstar, where it's like this person can just like solely exist off of like, you know, getting a, you know, contract with a big company. It, like, tube sites have totally changed that game. And because there's more of a control back in the performer's pocket of like where they make their money, they were like, I think Sherry DeVille doesn't really do a whole lot of kind of like more mainstream work because she's breaking it in on her OnlyFans and Snapchats and like clip store stuff. And then she can decide how she wants to work, who
and
she
how
wants
much
to work
she's going to get paid to do it.
Exactly.
Because now
exactly.
She has become this iconic because of doing all of her own shit. She can now show up when she decides to show up, take the site, because you know, this is a performer. They call and say, go to work. All right, I'm going to work.
Yeah.
And you get to a point when you build your brand so high, and I've got her coming on the podcast soon. So I'm all like, I'm going to talk to her. I'm like, you need, don't tell me all the secrets because we're not going to, but she hustles. That woman fucking works her ass
yes.
off.
Yes, she does.
But to get to a point where she is in a tax bracket that's higher than most, probably most of all the people that are in this industry, because she's raking it in and she's figured out the system of how this works.
Yeah.
And she's doing it well. So now when she shows up and we'll say, you know, the average boy girl rate is, you know, a G, she comes in there and it's like, you know, if you want to shoot me, it's going to be three. And not to say that that's what she's doing, people. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, but if she can now come in and demand it, and people are like, well, fuck, she's so huge.
Then it's gonna make its money
it's
back.
It's going to make its money back.
You're worth it.
Yeah. And especially having the social media presence that she has at that level. But and again, I say her because she's a friend. I actually know her. But there's plenty of girls that are fucking doing the same thing. Probably just boys doing it that's killing it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the sort of... I keep saying OnlyFans because that's the one that like pops up to my head.
Right.
I'm in no way affiliated with them. I do have an OnlyFans though.
What's your OnlyFans? Everybody wants to say.
I think it's just Mickey Mon. I think it's like OnlyFans / Mickey Mon. But you know okay. what? Editing. When I figure out what it is, you can just drop it right in here.
Exactly. Just text me when you figure it out.
Yeah.
We'll see if
I think it's. I think that movement of the kind of direct to like performer, direct to consumer is. Kind of going to change the industry the way that like Lyft and Uber came in and kind of changed the traditional like taxi industry, right? Like
right.
all the frustrations that like people had with like catching a cab and you're like, oh, well, I can't always use my credit card or they don't always have enough change. They won't come to my neighborhood or they see that I'm like, I look this way and they won't pick me up. I mean, not clearly Uber and Lyft have their problems, but
right.
In terms of like seeing this sort of like gap where like people weren't, all these communities weren't being served or people had these frustrations, you kind of eliminate that with, you know, with sort of like direct to consumer from like performer to consumer content model. You know, people are able to kind of see the things that they want, directly communicate with that performer instead of a production company that right. like might have someone who like reads a comment, might relay that to a director. That director may or may not choose to either hire that model again or even relay that comment back to that model
right.
For them to incorporate in the next, you know, content, which may or may not be in a couple weeks or a couple months because of the way that we cycle through. If you like a performer, right. you can just get this stream of like just this performer
unlimited
what they want to do
right.
in this genuine and intimate fashion.
And that's where the money comes from.
Yeah.
And I think it's changed. And I say this a lot too on the podcast is that it's like the music industry in the 90s. Like we still yep. have a huge booming music industry and we still have mega fucking stars. There's always going to be the Beyoncés and the fucking, I always forget what's the white girl, Taylor Swift.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I say the whitest girl that sings, people are like, oh, Taylor Swift? And they're megastars. And you got fucking, you know, like fucking Beyonce's other half, Jay-Z. That fucking guy just hit billion, wasn't it billionaire status? Did you hear
yeah.
about that?
Yeah.
Fucking unbelievable. So the music industry is still flourishing, but you don't get to go to a show for $10 or $15 anymore. And it's not because it's 2020 opposed to 1985. It's because the game changed.
Yeah.
So you have to spend $75 for shit seats to go see any kind of, I don't even know if you can get into like a fucking a mega star thing with like $75. I think it's closer to $150-$200 to get tickets now, and that's how they're making their money because streaming doesn't pay shit. Just like yeah. fucking, we're getting paid what a tenth of a penny on like every 10,000 clicks on Pornhub or something like that. It's ridiculous. There's no money. Yeah. The streaming service doesn't pay shit. So buying the DVDs of the porn or subscribing to OnlyFans and fucking FanCentral, that's how I feel now people are earning their money and performers are filling the gap because people are shooting less because all the budgets are dropping because there's not enough money because of all the tube sites. So
yeah,
I say fucking keep going, all of them.
And performers are getting you know, I think providing like more content and more, even though people are kind of like shooting less for companies, I think people are, I think the type of like clip content that you can make is has got a greater range, right? Like you can make a 20-second video and put it on, you know, like your clip site, and that's totally fine where that wouldn't fly for, you know, a Brazzers or a Kink, right? You right. can't put up like these sort of like short clips, you know, that are shot on your phone, but you have that sort of like accessibility of like content. And oh, actually I made shirts like Charlotte's shirts are awesome, and I see them like everywhere, and like that is, you know, I don't know what she's paying, but I know that she's, you know, she's getting a lot of that money after like her, you know, production costs of that, of those shirts.
Well, she actually, I talked to her because I was looking at doing the same thing. I ran a campaign and like tested some things and people were like, oh, I like this. So I actually put some work in and I'm kind of got all the designs sitting on hold right now because the initial setup, I forget what it costs, but there's hundreds of dollars to get your site set up. So having a personal site and then you set this thing up and it's a one-time setup fee and then it goes directly to this company that she uses and it's a print on demand.
Yeah.
So if one random person says, you know, I want the Charlotte Blood shirt, which is, I think, what they referred to it before. They were told not to use blood anymore. Mm-hmm. But you know what I'm talking about, the iconic one. And I need a medium. Fine. Order the fucking thing. Because it's already, the initial payment's already been made, so it's just the print on demand. So I've been thinking about it, but it's the initial cost.
Yeah.
Setup. Because that's a big investment.
Yeah. And, I think, that's the risk you gotta figure out if that's going to be worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, I feel, but it's going to what we were saying, you know, about the OnlyFans and the fans intros and the, all this, you know, personal stuff that we're, you know, everybody's doing is it's, you can't just sit anymore and wait on Brazzers to call or, you know, Blacked to call or I just, whatever. You have to supplement because people, like I said, they're not shooting as much or you're not, you know, some people are like, oh, well, my new rate's going to be $2,000 because I don't shoot as much, so I need to compensate. Well, people are just going to shoot you less now.
Yeah.
But if you do put in that work and you do the things to make the T-shirts and to have the FanCentro or to have a podcast or anything that can get more people looking at you that can, and especially if any of it can generate fucking pennies, anything, you're moving in the right direction, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think it's always this like back and forth, I think, for performers to try to kind of figure out what is going to be like the strategy that's going to like get them like this comfortable position where they can kind of generate the most income, right? So they're looking at like, you know, you see people wanting to get on like these sites with higher visibility so that like when they do their like, you know, their clip sites or their OnlyFans, they have that sort of like, okay, I got visibility on this like big site and now I'm making my own stuff. So now I've got like these followers, like this traffic from this site that left me on there
right.
are now like, it, you know, there's always this sort of like back and forth trying to like figure out like what is going to get you your traffic that is going to like lead to those sales. And I, you know, something that you said about, you know, people kind of like, you know, changing up their rates and then like, you know, companies deciding to like shoot them less there, you know, and we're in, cause you mentioned blacked.com
right.
and, you know, I think that there is, problematic practices. I've definitely made my peace that I'm never going to shoot for that company. And have been,
me either. I just, they can't afford my rate.
I know.
Well, I'm the same way, but you,
but I think they have a problem with paying people's astronomical rates for, and setting a precedent that,
which is weird because no offense. I mean, to them, what little bit I've watched, it doesn't seem like there's a very high production value. I feel like they have a fucking key light on the camera that they're shooting with and they go. Yeah. It doesn't look like there's a high production. So I'm like, you've got, you know, I think five dudes that are there and then the little girl. And I say little because that's the stereotype they play to is the little white girl.
Yeah.
Who's, oh, I can't believe that cock is so large. And it's like, it's, they play to every stereotype, but it's like we said, it's what people are fucking, you motherfuckers are buying it.
Yeah.
So that says something too.
Yeah. I mean, and this is the kind of like chicken or the egg thing of like, all right, like at what point, you know, cause I think people like argue, all right, this is what people are buying. And people are afraid to like change things because you're like, well, what if this thing doesn't make money? And they're like, I don't know, because like we've never sold it. So we can't say that it, you know, right. makes money or it doesn't make money, but like, I'm afraid of like losing this money that I'm already making. And people keep like asking for this thing. I do think that, kind of what I was going to say is that when companies offer more money for, and this is it always gets me into like a weird argument with performers, about IR rates. And for people who may not be aware, there are certain companies that pay more money for IR, which is 99.9% of the time a white female working with a black male.
Right. And that's basically the only time IR exists, as far as I know.
And yeah, in terms of booking, I feel like people will market it and put IR on like any sort of thing to kind of get that click.
Right.
But in terms of booking, generally what happens is like there's like a rate that is like above a normal boy-girl rate that people feel they need to incentivize, either whether it's a first IR or, you know,
every IR.
Or every IR after that. And that rate is only an additional fee for white women.
And to fuck a black man.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of a white woman getting an IR rate for fucking a black woman?
No.
I haven't either. So it's just a white girl.
Have you ever heard of a black woman getting an IR rate for fucking a white man?
Oh, no. But you know what I'm going to be talking about in a couple hours, because I got Anna Fox coming by after you leave?
Yeah.
Her and I are going to be talking about similar stuff, because it is. There is, and you and I know, you know this about me. I don't play to that shit. I don't like it. Like, yeah. I have booked models and back at the Armory when I was running boy-girl sites. And if the girl was like, I'm cool with doing that site, but I don't do IR, take her off my list. I'm not shooting her.
Yeah.
Because you're allowed to have your opinion, and I'm not going to shame you for that. I'm not going to give you shit. But I also, as a producer, director, I have the choice to just say, no, I don't want to shoot you.
Yeah, I don't want to support that.
The best of luck. Do your thing. And I feel like the IR rate was slipping, and it was going away.
It was.
It was almost gone, and people were getting to the point where they're like, what do you mean IR? Nobody's paying you an IR rate. And then Black showed up, and everybody's like, ta-da, bitches, now it's all back.
Yeah, because they were really, really capitalizing on, like, the first IR, and it became this thing where everybody was waiting to do, you know, to get that call to like do that first IR shoot, because it was shot in a different style. And I think people weren't really looking at a lot of the context of some of or scenarios of some of those shoots.
Right.
It is a lot of the same stuff that other sites are doing. But because of the production value, I think a lot of people kind of got blinded to the fact that it's like, it's the same shit in different wrapping paper.
Right.
It's still shit, and it still capitalizes on a lot of like really, really kind of like fucked up narratives about like fragility of white women, about the black man coming to like, you know,
plant his seed.
Yeah. And there is so like people often, you know, ask me about like, oh, what can the industry do to like make, you know, a better place for like people of color in the industry. And I'm like, put them in other shit where you're not constantly talking about them being a person of color.
Or like, better yet, yeah, don't shoot a person of color and then say, hey, by the way, this ebony black exotic so-and-so, how about just say it?
Yeah.
Like, I stopped doing that because it got to a point where it was like, I don't say that white girl. I don't say that Asian girl.
Because it's the default. You know,
right? And but it's also a fucking keyword that sells.
Yeah.
But before we skip away from that, because I had a thought I want to bring up.
Yeah.
To be the devil's advocate for a minute, how many people are looking at what we do when we tie girls up and we beat them and fuck them and they're crying, and they're like, "That's fucked up," and you're perpetuating the same shit. And doesn't mean that I agree or disagree with any of the stuff that we. But it's more of just saying that there's people who look at our shit, especially mine, because I mean,
yeah.
I that are like, "Well, dude, you're fucking glass house. You can't throw stones. You're torturing women." So we could possibly be put in that same thing, but I feel like it's the same, but it goes, the conversation goes both ways is girls going to be like, well, I don't want to shoot with you because I don't like that style. I don't like what it says. I don't like what it does. I don't like how it puts women in certain positions, which we know what it is. And I'm sure that every dude that shoots for Blacked is like, all right, well, it's, you know what? It's, I'm just doing it.
Yeah.
And like we talked about earlier, it's just acting. But it does, it's, and I think the reason it bugs people more is because it's fucking with race and yeah. race play. And there's models that come in here, and that's one of the things they say, and clearly not white girls. But because, you know, I mean, I'll shoot anybody. If they're hot and they're down, I'm down too. Mm. And a lot of the girls that come in here that aren't white say, you know, no race play.
Yeah.
And the first thing I think is I'm like, what fucking set have you been on that you have to, that you, and I don't think that I've ever put anything out of me doing some shit like that, except for maybe in a title, Black Ebony Slut or something like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know, to each his own, I guess, as long as everyone in there is consenting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like begrudge any like performer that, you know, shoots for that site. I do think the practice and the, all right, like you got to eat, right?
Right.
So like make your money, do and make your money. And I do think the problem is not with, I think the problem is societal, not like specific to like that company or our industry. I think the problem is the society's view of there's only limited roles that people of color can play.
Right.
You know, and that filters down to porn big time. Like if you are putting like Asian people as like, you know, masseuse and like maids, because like you can't think of any other way to put them. Like you have to kind of check yourself and be like, where the fuck does that come from?
Right.
You know, and where does it come from where like people like want that and can only conceptualize like these people and these certain roles where, you know, white performers get to be literally like anything. And you know, I've had people, you know, in the industry tell me like, oh, I would love to shoot you, but like, I don't shoot interracial on my site. I'm like, well, then you can put me with a brown person and then it's not,
yeah. I'll just not shoot all the white folks.
Or, you know, or like people, you know, can't conceptualize that, like, you know, we have done a really good job of like making our money by like making things like really easy for people to find,
right?
By segmenting things and like having these tags of like, you know, big boob MILF. So you can like easily find what you're looking for. But I think also oftentimes that gets into this weird sort of like data game where you're like, oh, I need to like, you know, put this group here and this thing here so I can get like the most keywords so that people are going to like click on this thing. And
right.
We oftentimes forget that, like, yeah, there are people who have to like, the performers have to deal with the psychological fallout. Like, yep. You know, as a director, you kind of have this like layer of like, insulation between a lot of, I mean, I think that's kind of changing with Twitter and social media, but like there's this sort of like the production company has this layer of protection of having to respond to that than the performers do, which are like, you know, have to kind of be kind of engaged with their fan base.
Right.
And I know people who have like, you know, left the industry because they were put in like movies that, you know, often get titled after the fact and may get titled offensively or horribly, and they have to defend that or they have to kind of reconcile that.
Right.
And they have to do that kind of psychological labor of like, you know, and I do that too, because like, you know, most of the time I get booked with, because there's such a focus on IR, almost the majority of my career has been me being booked with like, you know, white female talent.
Right.
And then I have like, you know, fans of color or, you know, other people be like, oh, well, you don't like black women or you don't like women of color because like I never see you working with them. And I'm like, I never get booked.
Yeah.
With them.
It's not your choice.
If you know, if I do, I get booked by those companies that like don't make it a big deal. And so like it doesn't come up in like, you know, the weird
noticeable
search times that things or people are looking for. And also that becomes like, because I don't live in LA and I don't go to industry events, that becomes like, all right, here are the circle of like people that I know. So
right.
Like when I go to do trade shoots with people, I usually go to the people that I know, because like, I don't know like people's level of professionalism if I haven't like met them. And I'm like, oh, like Arabelle, I know Arabelle, and like, she lives in my hometown and like we're good friends and I know like we can go and we can like do our content for a clip store. And then like, you know, I think that's the thing that like, you're, I think you're starting to hear this a little bit more. And I think the performer community is really good at kind of like outing like bad actors, especially with like kind of like the content trade game of right. calling people out of like, I work with so-and-so and like they were a shitty person, or I work with so-and-so and I like never got my footage, or this person like right. gave it away for free when I said I wanted to like, you know, charge this specific amount for it. And so people have been like really good about like calling people out, but I think it, you have to kind of do your research in that to kind of like, you know, protect yourself. So where do you start with that? You start with a community of people that you know.
Right.
And if you're only working with like a certain group of people, like that's where you're starting out. And it's, I forgot really where I was going with this, but I just kind of, you know, I think there are these things that like people don't realize. I think especially like male performers have like really on the kind of, you know, on the straighter end of things have less options than people think that they do in terms yeah. of like who they get to work with. It's very rare that I know who I'm going to like work with
right.
before until like a couple of days before that shoot sometimes.
Exactly.
You know, there's a handful of directors that would say, hey, I'm thinking about putting you with this person or this person, but they've already made up their mind. And I know, you know, I know with certain people, I'm like, okay, well, it's either going to be that person or that person. I don't right. get to say like, actually, can you book me with Anna Fox?
Right.
You know? But you know, if I were to work with like you, I know I could be like, all right, who do you got? And like, cause we have that, cause you, I think because, and I think this is the thing that like, I talk to people, you know, at this expo and just in general in the industry who, you know, maybe have an aversion to kink or want to shoot with kink and have questions about it.
Right.
And you know, they really want to know like what their time is like on set. And they really want to know that like, they're not going to get hurt because what we do is dangerous. And what we do, can be,
it's scary to look at.
It's scary. And like, it's, you know, we edit it and we produce it in a way to like make it look, extreme because that's where our money comes from.
Right.
And I think when you're on those extremer ends and, you know, going back to the thing where people kind of forget that like, oh, like this is, it's real, but it's also a production. Right. And you know, we do some things that are way realer than a lot of other sites on the vanilla end of the spectrum do. But what we do is that we put a lot of energy and effort to making sure that people are safe so they can go to that really vulnerable space. This is something that you do like so well. And right. There's not like a, like, I feel like there's a very like small amount of women that you've worked with that do not say that they love you,
right.
that they love working with you because you're able to kind of create that space and that environment on set so that people can like, you know, either push this kind of like dark fantasy or go to this like, you know, really vulnerable place to kind of get right. that reaction because they know that like when they get to set, they know what's going on. They know like, you know, how like they're going to like stop the scene if they need to stop the scene, whether it's like things are intense or they just need a drink of water.
Right.
You know who they're going to be working with. They know that person that they're going to be working with is like skilled and trained and there for their safety and them to have like the best day on set ever.
Right.
And then they know that they're going to get paid whether they do the whole scene or that they do a portion of the scene.
Right.
And, I think that's something that like a lot of other companies can learn from. I think especially the part where, you know, we do these beginning, and interviews, and there was this panel on, an X-Biz, and Casey Calvert was on this panel, and there's a few other, I think Aiden Starr was also on this panel. And it was just kind of like, I think a director's panel or in performers who've then become directors.
Right.
And their conversation about like, you know, beginning and end interviews came up and Casey Calvert made this clarification. It's like, all right, there's two types of interviews. Like there's the kind of kink style interview where you're talking about like, what do you want to do? What are you expecting? What are you nervous about? What are you excited about?
Right.
And then, you know, the end interview of like, what was really difficult for you? Like what went well, like, would you come back and do it again? And then there's the other style of interview that is like, were you raped today? Were you assaulted? Did someone ask you?
That word specifically is used.
That word is specifically used sometimes while like holding up like a piece of paper that has like your name and the date written on it, or like,
and they sit here like this, and they're like, so before I can hand you this, I need you to answer me some questions. And they what I've heard other performers use the term is they hold it hostage.
Yeah.
So were you raped today? Well, fuck, if I was, if I say that, are you going to give me my check?
Yeah. And you put people under duress under that. I mean, like, you know, I think people are always going to argue that there's like no true consent, like under capitalism. Right, like if you have to like do things to like make money in order to live, like that is the system that like you're just subjected to,
right,
and so like you can't get out of that. And I think people have a hard time conceptualizing that like all of you motherfuckers are doing it. Like if you live in a capitalist society, like you are doing it in some way. Like no one ever says like, man, I really wish that these athletes weren't out there using their body like that. Like, I really wish that they just would, you know, get a real job and take care of their mind and, like, you know, not be out there, like, flaunting their body around on the football field. People do that shit with sex workers, like, all the time.
Yeah.
It's the stigma around it that, like we're all doing the same shit. And people are like, oh, well, your daughter, what if, because I'm also a dad. And we kind of, like, you know, talked about that, but we didn't really bring it around. And, you know, I have a daughter, and like people are asking, like, well, what if your daughter was doing it? What if your daughter was a sex worker? I'm like, if she wanted to choose that and she's safe, then like, I respect that decision.
More power to her.
Yeah. But here's the thing. It's like, we don't make a world that's safe for women. That's just in general. That's not porn. That's just fucking human beings. That's men.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So like, the bad shit that can happen to my child who's a sex worker is the same bad shit that can happen if she worked at a bank.
Yep.
And like,
and sometimes worse, because what's happening on set, for the most part, especially with reputable companies, is people aren't having shit like that happen. There's not unconsidered. There's going to be certain things that happen sometimes.
Yeah.
But I feel like, and when I talk about this, I always say that's not just us. It's not just in this industry, because Susie over at the fucking bank has got, you know, Billy pinching her on the butt every time he walks by, and she doesn't know what to do, and she goes and sits in her car and cries, and then she goes home and acts like there's nothing wrong when she's around her husband and child, because she's afraid to say anything, because somewhere, somehow, she thought that it was her fault, and she's been made to believe that. And there's that kind of shit that happens at a fucking bank job, or it happens in a restaurant, or it happens anywhere else. So it's not like, oh, these poor girls. And no one thinks about that poor girl who in accounting has been fucking harassed or pushed into a fucking broom closet. And you want to keep your job, you're going to shut your fucking mouth. And to act like that doesn't happen in the outside of our industry just blows my mind. People are like, but you poor girls are doing this and they're sex trafficked. Most of the women in this industry choose to be here. They choose who they will and will not fuck. They choose what type of scenes they're going to do. Susie at the fucking bank doesn't. Susie has to have that job because that's what she can get. And that's what she's doing. And HR, well, I don't want to lose my job because, you know, whoever did whatever they did, and I don't want to get them in trouble. And not to say that that doesn't happen in our industry, but for people to assume that it only happens in our industry drives me crazy, because it happens all over the fucking place.
Yeah. And you know, when people, you know, talk shit about sex workers and say that they need to kind of get a real job and that what we do is degrading, I'm like, all right, let me put it to you this way. What is more degrading? Is it more degrading to work at a shitty restaurant job where I have to pretend to be nice to every person who comes in, regardless of their attitude, for minimum wage, which is something that we've all established as like, this is the least amount I can pay you to live.
This is the most humiliating thing you can do to a human.
For an adult.
I mean, as a child coming into the workforce and you're learning things, it's still not the best, but you're living at your folks' house.
Yeah.
But as a grown-up, to still have to be subjected to, well, this is all we think you're worth.
Yeah.
It's degrading.
Yeah. And, like, my income and my tips, like, depend on how much I try to, like, impress you in song and dance for 8 hours at a time. Or I could come into a studio for a couple hours, do my thing, you know, shoot a great scene, possibly have some awesome sex, you know, oftentimes with someone who is like really hot, leave with like what would be kind of like the equivalent of like, you know, sometimes a couple weeks or a month's salary for a minimum wage worker.
Right.
and to be able to kind of make my own schedule, like, yeah, I know that doesn't seem like a real job because your real job sucks. That's the thing. It's like people who say that want us to be as miserable as they are at their real jobs.
And that's usually where it comes from. It usually comes from people who are, it's self-loathing. They hate what they're doing. So they deflect and they put it out, and it's super fucking hard negativity because they're unhappy, because they're miserable, because they are getting pinched on the ass by the boss man, or they're being fucking spit on, or not figuratively spit on, as they have to sit there and put on that smiley face because the place is slammed. And there's always that Karen, we'll use the term, who, or whatever, there's always going to be someone who's going to sit there and throw a fucking fit on a Friday at 7 p.m. Why is it taking so long? Where's my fucking food? Bitch, you came at the busiest time of the entire fucking week, except for 24 hours later, tomorrow on the Saturday, when it's going to be just as busy. You know you're here for whatever reason that you're sitting here in front of me at the busiest time of the day. If you can't go to a restaurant and stop bitching about what is obviously going on, go home. Quit fucking with, because those people make shit money, and there's so many things that factor in. It's not like that the server is like, you know what? Fuck her. I'm going to sit over here and ignore her, and then I'm going to go tell the kitchen, hey, can you just not make that food? Mm-hmm. Everyone's moving as fast as they can. Everyone's doing the best they can. And so to treat someone like that, and then even worse, to expect them to put up with people, to treat them like shit the entire time. They're working harder than most of us for a lot less money.
Yeah.
And they have to put up with a lot more psychological shit than most of us for a lot less money.
Yeah.
So be nice to people, motherfuckers. Yeah. How about that?
Tip your bartender.
Yeah, tip your bartender. Let's go back real quick because we went away from it, but I do want to talk about, because we were talking about the interracial stuff and we kind of bounced around. How are we doing on time? We're getting close to, we got a little bit of time, right? We're still good?
A little bit of time.
Okay. We'll start wrapping this up. I do want to say, because we were talking about, you know, the IR thing and this, that, and the other, I feel like, to me, that people are going to do the stereotypes. They're going to use the T word instead of transgender, or they're going to do the she-male, or whatever the crap they're going to use, because that's what's searchable. And people are starting to learn that that's not acceptable anymore. But so what I'm saying is that our industry is going to consistently play to stereotypes because that's what sells. And more power if that's what you want to do. My thing is this: why is it that a white female, because it's not a white male, it's only, like we've talked about earlier, it's only a white female. Why is it okay for them to get paid more for doing the same thing that everyone else is doing, but it's only, they're like, well, I need to get paid more because he's black. That's the part I don't agree with. That's the part where I'm like, you know, if you want to play to a stereotype, fine, because people are going to sit there and be like, well, JP, look at the shit you do. Or, you know, what, because we do some crazy shit. You and I have done some crazy shit. So, you know, let people be. If that's what it is, you know, we all have a choice whether we want to work with them or not. But it's the industry as a whole thinking that it's still okay to pay more money and having these models go, well, I'm going to fuck up my first black dude, so I expect whatever outlandish amount of money. I think that's the part that pisses me off the most, is that we still enable people to say, here's more money just because your co-star, not the stunt dick, your co-star, the person who's starring in this film with you, who's equal to you, you need to get paid more because of the color of their skin. If that shit happened anywhere else in the fucking world in any other industry, dude, there'd be a goddamn shitstorm.
Yeah. Well, I think all the shame and stigma around sex work in general is what kind of keeps people from feeling like it's a space where people deserve like the same fundamental rights as other work environments.
Right.
Right. Like if people were able to kind of acknowledge that the work that we do as work and acknowledge that we're people who need to be treated fairly.
Right.
And, you know, that is, you know, things that people bring from the outside into this industry and vice versa. It is this sort of kind of like feedback loop of shame and stigma that like, and just general racism that we just don't deal with in this country that like, you know, permeates every, I think that's the real insidiousness of like racism, is that there's no untouched space by it.
Right.
Right. There's no bubble where it doesn't like factor in. You know, we do these things because like we see it happening on a larger scale, and we, you know, choose not to talk about it or choose not to deal with it because of the privileges of the space that we're in.
Right.
It's probably not going to change for the adult industry because people are very slow to change. I hope that I'm wrong, and I hope that people want to kind of sit down and kind of have the conversation about how we market things to the audiences and what audience we want to right. cultivate, and what sort of things that we want to kind of, because in a way we do kind of train them to like expect certain things. Like we've trained them to expect a certain like, you know, a certain like range of like sex positions in a certain order.
Right.
And we have, you know, often, you know, forgot that like we do have a lot of kind of control of our narrative, and that we can kind of affect some change. And there are some companies that do that and right. choose not to like, you know, defy that stereotype, but oftentimes those companies don't have like the money and the marketing power to get it out there to a lot of people.
Right.
But I do think that's changing. I do think that people are, and I do think that's one of the reasons that like kind of like this performer led kind of content is doing so well, is because, it is, consumers can kind of be real about what they want and, right. and get it, which is not something that, has been a very good feedback loop for companies.
But I think at the same time with what you're saying, and it's because 5 years ago, I think as close as five, at least 10 years ago, most people searching for porn with, trans women or trans people, they didn't use the word trans. They used tranny, which is derogatory. It's a slur as far as I'm concerned. Or they would do the shemale. So it was, and I feel like because that curtain has been pulled back and more performers are, like what we were talking about earlier, they've broken down these walls. I feel like it's getting to where people are like, okay, that we're going to go with trans. We're not going to do, you know, the other slurs. And I feel like if this cycle of, if we can get back to where we were before black showed up and a performer, let you guys want to jerk off, do it, jerk off to, that's your prerogative. But it's, if we could get back to a point where there's just no, okay, well you get to ask for more money because of the color of someone's skin that you're fucking, get to a point where that's non-existent anymore. And then the, you know, it's at least, I feel like me personally, I feel like that it would at least take some of the sting out of the shit. I mean, I obviously there's shit that I'm never going to understand, that I'm never going to know, because I do have white skin and I get that. But I feel like at least that would pull the sting back a little, as a director anyway, as someone in this industry, that it wouldn't be as bad if you knew that you're going to get paid the same amount of money that you get to fuck me as you do to fuck anyone else.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, the thing really comes down to is like, why aren't people kind of, it's the type of, like, these things happen because people don't see people as human beings.
Right.
Right. And if you, you know, if you see people as human beings and you value them as human beings, the decisions you make around that don't let you make decisions that kind of foster inequality, right?
Right.
You see two human beings doing, you know, work together, it makes sense to pay them the same amount. You know,
right.
You see two human beings like working together, it makes sense to like market them as two human beings, and not market them as their differences, or maybe there's things that are more about like the connection involved with them, or right. like what are they bringing together to the table. And it's hard when human beings are really, really, really good at putting things in categories. Like, we do that all the time, where, you know, where we like look at somebody, we decide their gender and their ethnicity and like their style, and like we, you know, we use that information to kind of make certain like assumptions, or to like,
right.
you know, make certain, you know, choices or the way that we're going to act based on what we, you know, the categories that we've like put people in. And where we're really good at doing that on a very like, you know, quick instantaneous level, like the thing that we often like forget is that like you have control over, like the only thing you have control over is like your actions around that.
So how
like,
you act, right?
Yeah. So you may have been trained a certain way to like see a certain type of way that someone is dressing and you lump them into this category of like, oh, like this person who comes from like this part of my town and like I need to treat them accordingly.
Right.
You have to remember that you have the space to be like, why do I need to treat him that way? Does that like, is that going to make that person's like day better or shittier?
Right.
You know, is this the world that I want to live in?
And you can't help it. And I say this a lot to people is that all of us have had experiences. We've all had things happen good and bad. We've all had really great times. We've all had some shitty times and we've all probably at some point have been fucked with or abused or whatever by a certain type of person. You can't help, especially if you've been, whether it's bullying, sexual, you can't help how you feel when you see that type of person.
Yeah.
What you can help is how the next step, like if you see someone and there's a stereotype. Okay. So just for instance, we're going to say there was, you know, I walked out of a store one day and I got bullied and picked on and someone took my wallet and he was a Latin dude. And he looked in the lower part like he was in a poor neighborhood, so he had this look like you were talking about. You may not be able to help every time you see a Latin dude standing outside of, you know, a fucking convenience store dressed a certain way to go. But what you can do is act accordingly, like you said, to where you don't go, oh, fuck, and try and avoid him or freak the fuck out. Because that one person that was dressed that certain way, that had that certain skin color, was that person. It wasn't the entire fucking community. It wasn't the entire race. It wasn't the entire social standing. It wasn't because they were poor or because they were Latin or because they were at a convenience store. It was one fucking person. And how you act about that and reprogramming your brain to where you're like, okay, I can't let this. And it's for anything in your life. You can't let one thing dictate the rest of your life because of that one fucking person or that one thing.
Yeah, I think, there's like a saying that my mom would always say, and I think it was, Buddhist that says like, you know, the thing that like you fear most has already happened to you. And that, you know, a lot of like, your reactions to things are based on a situation where you felt most out of control.
Right.
And when you look at, you know, people who kind of study like hate groups and do like rehabilitation of people who've been in hate groups, there is kind of often this thing of like, okay, like this person was kind of indoctrinated with like a narrative about the particular group of people that they hate or groups of people that right. they hate. And that usually that narrative involves like, you know, a great deal of fear around like loss of resources, which we see all the time, especially in the narratives that are going on in this country of like, they're going to take your jobs. They're going to take your women. They're going to take, they're going to take things away from you and make your life less than.
Right.
You know, they're out to get you. They're, going to do something that is going to impact your life.
Right.
Or the lives of your loved one in a negative fashion, which, is very effective at, like, triggering the sort of, like, flight or flight response in people of, like, I need to protect myself.
Which is where the stereotypes come from.
Yeah.
The negative ones, especially. Yeah.
And just, like, cues right into your lizard brain. And, like, you have to, like, you always got to keep your lizard brain in check.
Right.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and I don't know. I think that's, the hardest part is unfucking what's been done.
Yeah.
And we all emulate what our parents did to a certain degree.
Yeah.
And we also pick up on a lot of negative shit and bad habits because of our parents. Any bad habit that our parents did, especially unfortunately, if they're passionate.
Yeah.
Passionate meaning in a good or a bad way, the kid gets that way. And I was that way. My dad had a certain way that he thought about things and he spoke about things in the 80s. And I was like, well, fuck yeah, that's right. And then as I got older and started becoming a young adult, I was like, fuck, no, I don't feel that way. That's not who the fuck I am. That's who he is. Yeah. And I'm not going to be that way. But I thought the whole time, because they're doing it, so it must be right. And that's, as a fellow parent, the dad, that's one of the hardest things, I think, is trying to realize that everything we do directly affects this human who watches us, that we raise, good or bad. And it's then, and I told my kid just the other day, I was like, I have become a better human because of you, because I see you seeing me. So me flipping the bird, you motherfucker in a car, or, you know, or whatever negative shit. I don't want him seeing that. I don't want him seeing his dad, this big burly, I mean, this big fucking burly man who has to be this big aggressive fucking person. So I play around. I act silly. I paint my nails. I do the things that big burly men stereotypically aren't supposed to do.
Yeah.
Just to show him that there is no, you know, oh, that's a female color, or that's a girl this, or that's an unfucking misogyny at a fucking an elementary school level is ridiculous.
It is, yeah, it is ridiculous. And I think you forget about that, and then you have kids and you're like, fuck, man, like everything that people are buying my daughter is fucking pink, and like my daughter likes dinosaurs, but I can't find anything finding girl stuff with dinosaurs on it was like a weird thing that I'm like, I never knew I would have to have this weird hurdle. And if my child wears a dinosaur shirt that's blue, like, people think my child is a boy. And I'm like, this is so fucking weird. Yeah, it's really pervasive. And, like, I mean, even just kind of thinking about, like, what I just said, I'm like, I'm trying to find, like, girls' clothes with, like, the fact that, like, I'm already in that, you know? Like, my child can't just be a child, you know, and just do kid things. The level of like gender influence that is like kind of put on little children of like, you got to wear this color, you got to like these games and play with these toys. And like, you know, I'll see like, you know, my child on the playground with like older kids, and they'll like either like take away certain toys or hand, you know, her certain toys that they think that she should play with. Right. And like, usually those oftentimes can be around like gender lines, and it's ingrained in us like so quickly.
But it's teaching them, and it's unfucking that. And that's the thing. Like my kid, my listeners have heard this story before. My kid saw me. I had three nails painted because we were trying to decide on a color for the girl that was going to be doing a blowjob POV scene. And I was like, what color is going to look good on her? Well, I'm white. She's white. Let's put it on my hand. My kid saw it and thought it was the coolest fucking thing. Daddy, can I paint my nails? Fucking right you can. And we were out, and I use this answer when people are like, what the fuck, you got your nails painted? And I've had, you know, people talk shit, whatever, fuck them. But we were out, and this is the beautiful thing about children, is they don't give a fuck about anything. Hey, you're a kid. I'm a kid. You want to play? And they go playing. And I heard the little boy that he was playing with look at him, my kid, and he was like, why are your nails painted? And my son looks over at him and goes, why aren't yours?
Nice.
And I was like, but it's raising him, not that this is a girl thing or it's a boy thing. It's a you thing. Dude, he's walking around right now. He has a fanny pack that he packs so much shit in. He's got his own little hand warmer, and he's a bougie little fucker. But he also has, like, he has one of his close friends is a little girl down the street, and she has, have you seen the sparkly things that you push your hand one way and the other, and the sparkle colors change?
Oh, yeah. I've seen those, yeah.
She had a birthday party recently at a skating rink, roller rink. And, you know, you can do things, and here's $20 to go to the party with your friend, because we're friends with the neighbor, so the neighbors just took him along. Here's $20. He comes back, and he has a purse. It's about this. It's probably big enough to put your phone in and a couple other little items. And it's a fucking little purse. And he rocks that motherfucker. And if someone looks at him the wrong way, no. Like, he was growing his hair out for a minute because he had the long hair, and him and I both donated our hair. All three of us actually, the wife too. And he started to grow it back out, and his friends, the kids on the street were like, you know, talking shit. And he came in, he was upset one day. I'm like, what's going on? He's like, they're making fun of my hair. And I was like, why? They said I look stupid because I've got long hair and boys aren't supposed to have long hair. I was like, remember this, you're growing your hair to help someone who is in a horrible situation. Your friends are assholes.
Yeah,
all children are assholes.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I'm not being mean to you, but I'm telling you that every child on the street, with the exception of maybe the one up the street, your little, you know, your best friend, these children, you'll probably forget their names by the time you're in high school, unless we happen to not move and you guys grow up together. But I was like, at my age, almost everyone I went to school with, unless they found me on Facebook, I forgot about them.
Yeah.
And as soon as you see the name, you're like, fuck yeah. But I was like, at the end of the day, dude, and you're going to see this when you get older, and it's not going to make sense now, but none of this shit matters.
Yeah.
Fuck them. You do you, and you don't worry about anybody else. And you also, I tell him, remember how you feel right now. That fucking hurt, that sting you have going on, that fucking anger or whatever it is, stick that in your pocket And remember that the next time you're hanging out with your buddies and someone's laughing at someone else, you do that. You remember how this fucking feels. And maybe you go, hey, stop being a dick and don't say that to him or her, or don't act that way. And maybe you stand up for somebody instead of treating them that way because you remember how fucking bad this feels. So we'll see how he turns out. I think he's going to turn out to be a porn-hating little Bible thumper, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, you know, who knows? Who knows? My child could probably wind up being like a, you know, Christian rock musician. Like, just get like all of the things that are so far away from me.
And then end up going, you know, that when they become super huge and famous and Rolling Stone article, they're like, well, it started with my dad, the pornographer. That's why I go see a therapist every day.
Yeah.
So anything. So all right, man, let's wrap this up because I know you gotta get out of here and I gotta try and get some lunch and prep and I gotta hand a fox on the way.
Oh, fine.
This is my day. If I could have just got you two here with some cameras turned on, we could have made some fucking magic today.
I know. I wish I'd known you had her planned to be on the show. But
it was last minute. Like, it was after I actually texted with you last minute and we finalized everything, like right as I was getting ready to go to bed, she texts the wife and was like, hey, how's tomorrow at noon? And I'm like, all right, I guess I'm gonna skip my kid's game today. He's injured. He's got a broken finger anyway, So I'm not really missing much. So before we wrap this up, let me get some advice from you. I try and wrap all of these up with the same kind of thing. If you could give advice, and it can be super quick, but if you could give me, not me, but a person coming into the industry for the first time, if you had any advice, what would it be to someone that you could say, hey, before you start this porn career or before you go on your first set, you should know what?
Well, in my traditional fashion, I'm going to take what you said and actually just say something that I want to say, because I feel oftentimes this question is like, what advice would you give to the person who's new in the industry? But I'm going to give advice to the person who's been in the industry a while, to, I guess, better support people who are, so it is kind of your question. But I do think a lot of times, we have this, like, for people who've been in the industry, of like, well, I made it, I put in the work, I did this, you know, thing. So, I'm going to, other people need to like do that same amount of work. And other people need to kind of like step up to the challenges that I did in order to like make it where I am. And I think that we often forget that there were many people along the way who kind of helped us.
Right.
And that like you can kind of be that sort of guiding voice. And I think especially with like those of us who have kind of trauma in our careers about like getting fucked over and not getting paid, like having like unfortunate experiences on set that were, you know, damaging in some way, whether it be physically or psychologically, you know, to kind of remember like the people who were kind of around us and supported us
right
in those times, and to, you know, kind of extend a hand within reason, because I think there are a lot of us that from whatever circumstance we're coming from, want to kind of take in everybody. And that's, you know, you can only put out so much. You have to kind of take care of yourself.
Right.
And I think that is also kind of, I think, dovetails into what advice I would give to people who are coming in. Find someone that is kind of maybe at least somewhat going down the path that you want to go to.
Right.
And see if that is somebody that you can kind of like reach out to and contact, and really actually take the time to like do your research, not just on like what it's going to be like on set, but what it actually means to kind of like really create this persona, and to actually consciously create a persona. Cause I wish I had done that a little earlier and kind of recognized that game.
Right.
That I think a lot of people think that like you have to be like 100% you online and in your personal life. That gets exhausting for people to kind of, especially when you're generating so much content on social media that like everything has to be like 100% you all the time. But like you kind of craft this persona and you can choose what you put out there and save some stuff for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't think that like, and there are a lot of people that like we know that like, yeah, maybe the work that they do like doesn't encompass like the full realm of their sexuality or all the great and wonderful things that make them who they are. But like that's kind of their comfort zone and that's what they want to manage. And that's what kind of keeps them grounded. Like save those things that kind of keep you grounded to like yourself.
Right.
And keep that just for yourself and like maybe for like your small like community of like people who support you, because you will need that from time to time because you will get sick, you'll get injured, you will like get in like bad relationships that make you choose things about your career that you might not have chosen otherwise.
Right.
But you still have to have that touchstone of like, this is what makes you you. And I know that there's this temptation, especially the way that like people view social media, to put like all of your life online. Don't.
Yeah. Okay. You do. And you got to keep it. Yeah. I agree with that 100%. That was awesome. That was good detail or good advice, I should say. And with that, I'll say thank you, sir. This was awesome. This was really good. Yeah. I think everybody's going to really enjoy this one.
Also, another thing that I want to say, you know, I am kind of in this new role at Kink as a creative director, but, you know, I have you and so many other wonderful people to thank for kind of showing me, like, how things should be done, showing me and guiding me and teaching me and, you know, giving me a lot to kind of, like, reflect on and learn about so that we can kind of create better content for a company that actually like fucking tries. Like,
right.
You know, we don't always do it 100% of the time, but like a lot of people don't even try.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true. All right. Thank you, sir. You're a fucking badass. I appreciate you. See you at ABN tonight.
All right. See ya.
All right, man.